This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
To the Row One Seat One podcast. I'm here with one of my favorites here. St. Louis Anarchy is starting an interesting concept coming up in a couple weeks. It's starting every 2 weeks. They're kind of like the New Japan blocks. They're starting Block A and Block B, and one of the stars of their group and one of the stars of independent wrestling is someone I've been meaning to have on for a while. Welcome to the show, Thomas Shire.
Oh, hello. You say favorites and then, you know, everything. Wow. Like, I don't know. It feels good. It feels good when people say that.
No, seriously. You've been a favorite of mine for a while, man. You've been
I appreciate that.
You combine some interesting styles, and we'll talk about that coming up. And you bring a very unique skill set to the wrestling ring. What got you into wrestling? What made you fall in love with the sport of professional wrestling?
Got me into wrestling. Well, I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina, so I lived there until I was 14, so it's kind of just like, you know.
Horseman
that's
country.
It's just a pastime. I always say the story of there's a town in there. Wow, I'm going to forget it. Oh, no, I was born there, too, in Pineville. So in Pineville, there's a sign that says, "Welcome to Pineville," and it used to say Flair Country. And then when the NWO came around, somebody spray painted it with NWO.
So that's amazing.
That's how serious wrestling is in Charlotte. And we used to go Independence Arena. Now it's the Bojangles Arena. They used to have, you might be able to see like old Nitros. I always talk about this, but that's the Checkers Stadium. So they played hockey there for, I think it's the Carolina Hurricanes affiliate now, but the Charlotte Checkers, they have these really gross, like yellow and red and green and like purple little pillars on the side of the building on the inside. So you can always tell, like, you know, whenever they're at the Independence Arena. So, that's basically just growing up in Charlotte. And then my brother is about 4 years older than me. So he really got into wrestling. And my dad was really into, Jim Crockett Promotions and Georgia Championship Wrestling and stuff. And he actually grew up in Daytona for a couple of years. And so, you know, everything, championship wrestling from Florida down there and everything too, being on the TV. And so it's just kind of a family thing. So
in North Carolina, is it one of those things like it's almost taught in schools too, like with math and, with arithmetic and geography, like, you know, by the way, these are the horsemen, this is Barry Windham,
Today we're going to learn about Starrcade 82, Ric Flair beating Harley Race for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, and then Dale Earnhardt, you got to learn about Dale Earnhardt,
Richard Petty. Raise hell, praise Dale. Yeah, that's that had to be wild. I grew up in Boston, and like, you know, WWF was big, but I'm jealous of those people who grew up in, you know, in North Carolina or in St. Louis or, you know, one of those, you know, I was in New York or something like that, some of those wrestling hotbeds where it was just completely ingrained into the bloodstream, you know, where it's just wrestling is just completely part of the blood, you know. I mean you're out by Greensboro too, and Greensboro is, you know, a ton of 50,000 people, and they draw, you know, 15,000 every single week in the, you know, the Greensboro Coliseum. It's just part of the religion there, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, with Greensboro too, like, or Greensboro,
Greensboro,
that, like, there's wrestling, and then there's the ACC championship, you know, from NCAA. It's like, that's basically what it is. It's, go there, see Duke and North Carolina play, and you go see, you know, Ric Flair and the NWA and Four Horsemen and Dusty Rhodes and, you know, all those guys. And it's kind of, even St. Louis too. I mean, it's those NWA hotbeds of, you know, Harley Race, and then you get to see, Bruiser Brody and, you know, Lou Thesz coming up here. And then New York, you got Bruno and all those guys and Gorilla Monsoon and, you know, all those guys that came there, and even Florida too, with, you know, I mean, Dusty and then the Funks and everybody down there now, can't the Briscoes and, you know, so I really got to put, my brain back in my head today to remember all these names now. But yeah, I mean, Boston, you guys had good stuff. I mean, I'm sure you guys said, the Boston Garden.
So. Yeah, we had the garden. Yeah. But it wasn't anything compared to what you had, man. Like I'm jealous, man. I'm absolutely jealous of what you had growing up. Cause that had to be just in your bloodstream, man. Like that had to be just beautiful. Just had to be absolutely beautiful. So at what point do you just kind of get ushered to be, you know, a wrestler? Is that one of your chosen professions, or at what point do you decide this is something that I might want to take a crack at? Or were you an athlete kind of growing up, or, you know, how does that path kind of develop for you?
With that, I mean, I got into wrestling. I was born in 88. So I was there. Like, I think when like the Doink era and the characters and the Damian Dementos and stuff like that, like I know of it now, but like, I mean, I think the most gimmicky stuff was kind of like Demolition when I was growing up, and then like over the top kind of gimmicks, I guess, or things like the WWF was doing at the time. But at that time, I was kind of like I wasn't really watching wrestling as much. So like I had like the 88 to like maybe 92, I think, and then
that was my wheelhouse as a kid.
Yeah, and like, I mean, you know, I go back and I watch that stuff, and Roddy Piper is one of my favorite wrestlers, and Macho Man, and you know, Sting, and Ric Flair, and Undertaker, and everybody like that. It's like I remember we moved to an apartment in like 90. Well, no, we were already there, but in around like 95, I came back. I used to do Kenpo Karate, and I came back one day, and I went down in the basement and turned on the TV, and it was on USA. Just like randomly on USA, and Raw was going, and I saw the Undertaker, and he had like, it was Teardrop Undertaker too. So I was like, oh man, this is like way different than, you know, like when I was four and remembering Demolition and all that other stuff. Like it was different. It was starting to go towards more like DX and stuff, I think, at that time, or, you know, like watching Shawn Michaels not be in the Rockers, or, you know, things like that, and seeing Bam Bam Bigelow and people like that, Bret Hart, and people that I had known but like are now, they're bigger stars and they're more established. Like a couple of people have gone to the wayside, and then finding out about WCW. So I think around like 95, 96 I got back into it, and then around like 99 I was starting to be like, yeah, like, you know, cutting promos in the mirror and stuff, you know, Scott Hall, I'm gonna join the NWO. And, you know, I just remember that all the time, always talking about the NWO because I was watching WCW, and, you know, I was in Charlotte and gonna be like the hometown kid kind of thing. And but I think it really started going around like that time, 99, and then probably like 2004, WrestleMania 20. I was like, man, you know, I was going to graduate high school in about 2 years, and I was just kind of thinking of it and watching it and just seeing what all was going on and how wrestling was changing and getting more into All Japan and Noah and New Japan and stuff like that, stuff that I had really missed. And I was just kind of like, yeah, I can probably really do it. And I was filling out, you know, I was always kind of lanky and bigger than most of the kids in my class. But yeah, I was about like 190. I wrestled at 199 as senior before I messed up my rotator cuff. And so I was still, I mean, I was tall, but I was kind of lanky, kind of lean.
Because you're what, 6'4", 6'5"?
Oh, thank you. But I'm 6'3", yeah. But thank you. Yeah, I'm 6'5" with boots on.
You're wrestling 6'5",
yeah. Yeah, I look 6'5". That's what Dory always used to tell me. You'd be like Don Leo Jonathan out there because he's the Mormon giant. You know, he's this huge guy. But yeah, like I think around then, around like 2004, that's when I started looking at wrestling schools and saw that Dean Malenko had a school because I was living in Jacksonville, Florida at the time. And I saw he had a school, but then saw that it was defunct, and I think I went on ODQ.com back in the day.
We're dating ourselves here. Yeah.
Yeah, like back in the day, and looked at a couple of schools, and then I always was like a big X-Pac fan, and I think, I don't know if he had a school or like I heard that he went to Dean Malenko's school, so that's why I was so adamant about going to Dean Malenko's. And like, plus it's Dean Malenko, like I love Dean Malenko, he's such a good wrestler. And but yeah, then I found Dory's, and then after that I called them. I graduated in April of 2006, and it's
Dory Funk Junior School.
Yeah, Dory Funk Junior. Sorry, I always call him Coach or Dory. called Marty, I think in January of 2007, because I went to college for a little bit, and I just kind of
Marty Funk, his wife, who I heard is the sweetest human being who ever existed.
You will definitely love her. Oh man, yeah. There's a lot of stories about her, but this is my podcast.
I just heard she was a wonderful human being.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Fair.
Okay. No. Yeah. No. She's not that bad, but there's some things, you know, that you just, I don't know. I don't see why you would do to like an 18-year-old person, you know, just trying to become a wrestler or anything like that. But, yeah. I talked to her in February. I was down there in Ocala, started training. Long story short.
So Dory Funk Jr. is a legend. NWA champion for what, 6 years, 7 years? You're in possibly the best of possible hands there.
Yeah.
What is it like for an 18-year-old kid to walk into the school of a legend?
Well, the school wasn't much. No. Yeah, I mean, it was like in an MMA gym, and it was hot. It was Florida, you know, everything like that. I mean, 18-year-old kid and everything. Like, I had heard of Dory, but like really, I only knew of Terry. But then that was kind of like what nudged me to go there. I was like, oh well, you know, it's Terry's brother, you know. And then like hearing stuff and everything, and I was just like, okay, you know. I think he was NWA champion for like 3.5 or 4 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. Longest reigning world heavyweight champion of the modern era. You know, don't ever get tired of hearing that every month when I wrestled him, you know. So, but yeah, it was just, I mean, going there and you still see him. And I think he was like 67 at the time. But he was still like, his arms are massive. And he's got these hands that are just like, my brother said that they were like, the like steel pillows almost. Like they're just like, they're gnarly and they're hard, but at the same time they're still soft in a way. Like, I don't know, it's hard to really kind of put into words, but I think a lot of those old school, like I've met Stan Hansen and his hands were like that too. They just have like this, I don't know, those guys were just built different, I think, you know. But yeah, just walking in there and talking to him, and you can already tell like his knowledge and everything, and just, you know, the history that he has in wrestling, it's kind of like, oh man, yeah, like, okay, I'm ready to go, let's do this, you know.
So what is a training session with Dory Funk Jr. like? Is it just run you ragged, or is it a little more detail oriented?
Marty would run you ragged.
Okay, fair.
she'll get you with her words. No. But it was a regular training day. We'd show up, I think it was like Tuesdays, then we had Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Saturday was always like a morning class. It was usually like around 10 o'clock in the morning. And so I would drive from Jacksonville down to Ocala. It's only about 2.5 hours. And so Tuesday, we would watch, like if we had a show on Sunday, we would watch the film from that show, and then we'd go train. And usually like the training would be just getting in, stretching, and then we do a couple push-ups, like 20 to 30 push-ups, and do some bridges and neck work and stuff, like up and down, pushing each other's necks side to side, up and down. Then we get into rolls, then we do forward bump, backward bump. Then we'd be, this was a long time ago. but we always had the crash pad too. It was always a nice thing. Like, we would always have the crash pad, and then whenever we had training matches, he would take away the crash pad, so then everything would hurt again.
I was going to say, what's a Dory Funk Jr. ring like?
Yeah, well, it's actually the old power plant ring.
Is it?
Yeah, so I was spoiled. Man, if I could go back, the first three rings I ever bumped in were WCW power plant ring, All Japan ring, and a WWE ring.
Fascinating.
So, way before I was even on the indies or anything, I was doing that. And the WCW ring, I think I tweeted out a picture of it not that long ago, but they showed a picture of like the power plant, the rings, everything except for the posts and like the ring struts and like the wiring and everything for the ring is wood. So like everything is wood. And Dory said that was what made like the WCW ring sound more unique. So like everything was wood. And when I went to Japan, I think everything was kind of like that, but the wood that they used was different. It wasn't like the long it was just kind of like, you know, like halved. So like it would go to a certain point, like the middle, and the middle always sucked bumping in the middle of the ring. There's always like the side was the easiest to bump on, but yeah, that was it. I think it was like 18 by 18. The ropes were really, really nice, and the turnbuckles were always really kept up really nice. The mat was always really nice. It was just, yeah, it was probably one of the best rings, I think. I really like WWE rings. I like the ropes, but I also like the ring, the All Japan ring. The ropes are a little bit thicker, so I was able to do a little bit more high flying stuff, which I haven't really been able to do.
Like indie, you know, rings.
On the indies. I mean, you know, St. Louis Anarchy, we have the low ceiling, and then some rings are like hoses and stuff like that. So the quality of it, it's just, I always try to test it out. And sometimes I use it as an excuse. I know I can do it, but you know, some people aren't really expecting certain things out of me. So sometimes I'll bust it out. But yeah, we just used to go through rolls and calisthenics, and then we do bumps, and then we do takeovers, headlock takeovers, arm drags, schoolboys, practice lockups. And then he would kind of just, you know, if we did something wrong, he would go off on something and like, you know, some story from 1976. And, you know, like he was in the ring with Giant Baba training people one day in Japan, and he was doing an arm drag where like you would hook it, or no, he would do it like Jack Briscoe would do it. And then Baba told him to hook the arm and it would be way better. So like we learned like three different styles of arm drags, you know, the regular way, that way, and then like a different kind of, he always used to call it like a Billy Robinson style, where you kind of like keep the lock up and then go with it instead of, you know, sure, going off. So yeah, I mean, just a lot of that. I mean, we learned, I don't remember, we don't really, I mean, we didn't really learn like moves and stuff. I mean, we learned like slams and things like that, and we was just got drilled with the basics and the fundamentals all the time. And then if we wanted to do something cool, you know, some kind of weird trick or anything like that, he would always open up like 20 minutes before we did practice matches. And then we would do round robin matches, like 3 minute, 5 minute TV matches, and we would always film it, and then we would watch it the next day. We'd always have to do a promo, which I was horrendous at, especially being blown up after doing a 3 minute match and stuff. So yeah, I mean, that was, as best I can remember, that was the training.
And training with Dory afforded you a trip to Japan, did it not?
Yeah, yeah. So I was there about a year, and then they started telling us that Osamu Nishimura was going to come down. He came down with Tiger Hattori earlier on after, well, I'm trying to think, after maybe November, I think. Because we were, so side story, before Japan, it's just a little cool thing, because I graduated at the Jacksonville, at the stadium there in Jacksonville, and we were at a ECW SmackDown taping for WWE, and they called us down to like catering, and we actually met with Johnny Ace and Dory and everybody, and they were going to take some look at our tapes and stuff like that. And then,
oh, that's cool.
Basically say that they were going to offer us a contract from, you know, my like shocking state of being backstage and meeting with like executives only 8 months into wrestling or whatever. And so yeah, that fell through, because I guess Marty was nice to them too, and like I'm not trying to talk bad about them, but these are things that did happen. And
fair, no, that's entirely fair. It's good to know. Yeah
I've recently spoken out about it. There's stuff that you can find online too, you know, that I'm probably, you know, I don't want to go into detail of really, but you know, like, It's stuff that happened, and you know, if I get sued, I get sued.
Fair.
I don't know.
No, that's fair. No, it's fair. No, it's good to know the truth. Yeah.
Yeah, but I would never discourage anybody from going there either. I thought, like we were talking about, Dory's, I mean, he's the coach of coaches, basically. You know, like the coach of champions, and the ring is great, and his fundamentals and his mind and everything for wrestling. Like, I would never discourage anybody from that. It's just, you know, take a little precautions, maybe don't be 18 and really gullible and, you know, things like that. So, but yeah, like I thought I was going to be signed to WWE, and then the way it was explained to me, and then stuff fell through, and then yeah, the Japan stuff rolled through, and they said basically like, we want you to try to go to Japan, and we're gonna get you in contact with them. And Nishimura came down, wrestled him in like an hour-long training match.
That's so cool.
And Dory, yeah, it was wild because he did it with four other people before me too. So,
oh god,
yeah. But he was trained by Hiro Matsuda and Gotch and stuff too. So, I mean, he's used to and Tatsumi Fujinami is one of his trainers too. So he's very much like endurance based and just always stays in condition, like top shape all the time. And so yeah, like I got to wrestle him, and Dory was doing his retirement tour in March of 2008 for All Japan. Had like the big send off there in Sumo Arena. I can't remember the match that he had. It was a tag team match, I think, but they had like a big ceremony for him, and he became the president, I think, of the PWF, and just great stuff was going to happen. And I ended up going to All Japan in October 2008, stayed there for a month and lived in the dojo and trained alongside Sanada, Yamato, Kai, Ryota Hanma, Soya, like all these guys, you know, and trained with them, was a young boy with them. Like I had this idea of, you know, going over there and being a star, but really like I was lowest guy on there, helping out, washing dishes and making food and, doing the chores and doing laundry for the other wrestlers and, you know, putting bags down underneath the bus and getting them out for the wrestlers and, really just living the life of like a young boy there in Japan. And I mean, it was a great experience, and I wouldn't have been able to do it without Dory. You know, that's why I say, like, you know, I'm not discouraging anybody from anything. You know, I mean, my experience is different too than other people's too. It could be different. I mean, this was 2007, so, you know, or 2008 when I went over there and started 2007. So, but yeah, like just training there, I trained under Kaz Hayashi when I was there, and the dojo training was way, way, way different than Dory's training. It wasn't like 20 pushups. It was like 200.
Oh, jeez.
And then 200 squats and 200 lunges. And, you know, sometimes we would run and do rolls and stuff. I remember Hanma, who's a sumo, like 600 pounds or something like that. Kaz told him to do a headlock takeover on me one day. I think it was just a big rib, you know. It was just kind of like, you know, see if I would complain or something like that. But he squashed the hell out of me, man. Yeah, it was crazy. So,
did any of those fellow young boys, you know, guys you mentioned, seem to have star quality? Like, you could tell right away, like, this dude's going to be something?
Sanada, right off the bat. We showed up. We landed in Narita, and it was about an hour or two. The dojo in Yokohama City, and I think Soya opened up the door, and I feel like he did good stuff in like teaming with Omori in All Japan, and then Wrestle One and everything, and I feel like he did some really good stuff meeting Sanada, and then Kai also I felt was going to be like big star. He actually ended up being junior heavyweight champion a couple years after, and I think he does like FMW when they revamped or something. Mm-hmm. Or Big Japan. But yeah, like he was somebody I was like, oh man, this guy's really, really good. Yamato was really good too, but I don't know if he got, you know, like up with them. And then Hema was like just starting to train, so I think his first match was against Akebono at the Sumo Arena show that we did. And like, I mean, he's got tons of personality and stuff, but I don't know. I didn't really follow him as much, but out of like everybody, I really thought Sanada. And then of course, you know, being where he is right now, you know, with New Japan and LIJ and everything, like,
he's killing it.
Yeah. And I was able to get in the ring. I've actually wrestled him 2 weeks into the tour, and he really liked the British style. 'Cause the second day we were there in training, Kaz paired me and him off, and we just did British style stuff and, you know, doing cravats and stuff like that to each other. And I was like, dang, man, this guy's like, he just flows really well. And like, he makes everything look effortless. And, you know, I see people now, they're like, oh, can't believe this guy, you know, like, what's, you know, and talking about the Dragon Sleeper he does. And it's like, man, he just makes stuff look effortless. And that's why people probably think he sucks, you know, like.
Doesn't look like he's trying, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't. I mean, he jumps up onto the turnbuckle and does a swan dive drop kick without doing anything. He can really do anything. He can go and wrestle Zack Sabre Jr. and have a technical match. He can wrestle, you know, whoever, Ishii, and have a hard hitting match. He can wrestle Okada and have an entertaining match. Tanahashi, you know, like, he's somebody that's like super, super versatile, I believe. And, you know, he'll probably get a lot more credit years down the line. Probably he'll probably be one of those guys.
So from there, you train with Dory. You end up going to Japan a little bit. At what point do you decide to kind of branch out on your own a little bit?
Well, my parents moved to Texas when I was 20, so in 2008. So right before I went to Japan. So I was kind of thinking about going back to school, and I was kind of seeing some of the stuff that was happening with, you know, Dory's, and I was butting heads with Marty a lot, and, you know, just some of the stuff that, like, rumors that I heard and stuff. So I think the tipping point for me was I wanted to go visit my mom about possibly moving to Texas, and it was the same time we were going. Dory was helping out with FCW for WWE down in Tampa, and I guess they somehow got me and Shane like a tryout or something like that, like a 2 or 3 day look, going down to Tampa. And I remember being on the phone with her and she just telling me like they weren't going to push for me, you know, cause I was probably going to be leaving, and, you know, just saying that, you know, I wasn't really that good of a wrestler and stuff, you know, just stuff that's like, you know, why would you say that to somebody you trained, yeah. You know, like things like that. And those are things that, you know, like I said, that's my experience too.
Sure.
You know, like it's different for everybody, and maybe they were a little bit harder on me, or she was harder on me for certain reasons. You know, I was told when I played football that the only reason why a certain coach was hard on me was because he saw a lot of potential in me. So, you know, maybe that was just her idea of like tough love or something on me. But yeah, I remember she just called me a status quo wrestler, and that I was a fat white slob, you know. And
oh.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so...
the opposite of what I've seen you, but okay, sure.
Yeah, well, you know, this was also... I was about 21 at the time. It was 2009, so I stayed with him a year after Japan. And, yeah, like, she just... I mean, she just said all that stuff, and I mean, she was already pissed off at me a little bit anyway. So I was just like, all right, cool, you know, I'll go down to WWE and... You know, I'll make Shane look good and try to get him a job, you know, so just, you know, whatever, don't worry about me. And I went to Texas, and yeah, I talked to my mom, and I moved the next month after that down to Texas.
Now, how was the Texas scene when you were there? Because there was a lot popping there. I mean, ACH was coming up. There was a lot of talent in Texas at the time when you were there.
Yeah. Because I got there, I left December of 2009, and I really didn't start wrestling in Texas until maybe about like April or May. My sister got into a really bad car accident. And so like that kind of, you know, put stuff on hold, and I ended up going back to Dory's in March, and that was a whole thing. I was like 10 minutes late to an Impact taping, and Marty told me to go back home, and I was off of the show that we were going to have on Sunday. So, you know, that was another thing that kind of sucked about that. But yeah, going down there, I started up in Dallas, and then for David Fuller at IHWE, and I met Chris Wolf, his brother-in-law, who used to go to ACW in Austin, and that's where like ACH was really starting to make a name for himself, like you said. And there's guys like Matthew Palmer, Robert Evans used to come down a lot. Portia Perez was always there. Trying to think of more Texas guys, because I know those aren't really like Texas people. Rachel Summerlin was there.
Andy Dalton.
She was doing her stuff.
Andy Dalton was there.
Yeah.
Jackson Stone.
Yeah. Jackson Stone wasn't there at the time. Yeah, this was 2010.
Okay, sure.
So, like, 2010, Barrett Brown had just started coming up.
Sure.
Carson, Houston Carson, they had, like, the whole scene with, like, they called the group the Takeover. They had a guy named Jacus, James Claxton, and it was Carson. They were all in the group. And, man, dang, I'm really trying to think now. I mean, you had, like, a lot of the Texas scene, there was, like, guys that were, like, coming up, and then you had guys that were coming down, you know, like Robert Evans was helping out, Jimmy Jacobs, you know, Submission Squad was coming down, and, you know, like, Gary would wrestle, and...
Oh, yeah, Gary was in Texas at that time, yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah, Gary, yeah, all the Gary same J, guys yeah. would come down. Yeah, Gary J would come down, Davey Vega, Evangelistico, Pierre Abernathy, you know, they would come down, and then they were doing, like, cross-promotion stuff, I guess, with ACW, so they were doing like St. Louis Anarchy, and then they were doing Anarchy. So, but yeah, I'm trying to remember a lot of the guys because I mean, yeah, like Palmer was always really big on there. Man, I'm just keep on saying the
no,
same.
It's all good.
Names.
Yeah, no, it's all good. So you're coming up in Texas during that time, and mm-hmm. what were the main things you learned in Texas as opposed to learning at Dory's?
Well, like Dory's, I wasn't on my own. Yeah, sure. I was there with Dory. I couldn't really, I mean, I could in a way do indies, but we always had that 50-mile rule that you couldn't go anywhere else, and you know, really out of 50-mile radius. So I never really ventured out, and I didn't really know how to get out and like network and things like that. You know, like I always wanted to try to do FIP and places like that, and but I never knew how to reach out. I never knew this or that. So. The biggest thing in Texas was my brother's friend. My brother wrestles in Florida too, and he had a friend that used to wrestle in Texas, I guess, or did something in Texas, and he knew Fuller. So I reached out to Fuller, and then that kind of like started off. Like I had to learn how to, you know, network and market myself. And the biggest thing always was like the Dory, you know, trained by Dory, went to Japan, and everybody, like, I remember one company didn't want to book me because they thought I was going to, they didn't even ask me my rate. They just thought that I was going to charge them some exorbitant amount. And I'm like, no, you don't try to start off, you know? So like, that was like the second, it was like a reset for my career.
Your
basically.
Second education.
And
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, learning how to do that. And then I would, luckily for me, like Wolf was really good friends with Davey Vega and, like the Submission Squad guys, and he would always go down there and talk to them. And man, I'm just trying to think of more people that really, I mean, really it was like the squad just helped me out the most when I was really starting out in Texas. And
yeah, those guys are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. They really helped me out. And then I remember ACH didn't like me that much at the start. Yeah, with Vega and I became very friendly, like really quick off the bat. And so, like, we were driving down one time to San Antonio to do an extra show the day after an Anarchy show. And I made a joke, and ACH didn't like it too much. And so he didn't really like me for, like, a month. But then after that, he kind of, you know, we've known each other for 10 years now. And, you know, we always keep in contact and very close. I mean, I'm Vega's roommate right now, too. So that's, you know, kind of changed the course of everything. And now that I'm thinking about guys like Ricky Starks were coming up at the time, like,
oh,
really,
Starks,
really
yeah.
coming up. Yeah, like. Like really maybe like two or three years into the business and stuff to like me, or you know, maybe just a year in, or you know, a couple months in. And I had some matches. I had a match with him down there. Yeah, just basically, you know, learning how to market myself, and then talking to those guys and hearing their stories about, you know, having to get money from promoters, and you know, like physically having to get money from promoters because they didn't want to pay them, or you know,
Texas was, I heard, kind of the Wild West too, for lack of a better term.
It can be, yeah, definitely, because there's about like a billion promotions down there, and you kind of have to pick and choose where you wrestle to. Like I always feel really fortunate, like in my career and anything, of like if I ever felt, you know, negative to it, it's always because, you know, I just didn't push my potential, kind of thing. Where like meeting the squad and guys like those that helped me out at ACW. And then, you know, later on with Inspire opening up, with Biss opening up Inspire, and, you know, branching off from ACW, and like the squad got me hooked up with RCW and San Antonio and things like that too. So it's kind of, they always really helped me out, and I didn't really have to like, you know, haggle with promoters or hold anybody up or, you know, threaten anybody or anything like that, because it was always kind of like slightly negotiated by them. And then once they were kind of away and, you know, I was getting booked by those places again, it was more communication on my end. But they had already told me, you know, hey, look out for this, look out for that, because they were more seasoned than I was in dealing with people like that. So that's just one thing. I mean, definitely if you went to, you know, if you wrestled in Austin, you weren't going to get stiffed on pay, really. It was like if you went to like Mahia or someplace like that, yeah. You know, like some small town, and they're really banking on, you know, the house to really, you know, that old school mentality of like, well, we're going to promote and, you know, we're going to have 150 people here and only 20 people show up. And then it's like, well, guess what, guys? Light, you know, the house is light. And, you know, if you want a hot dog, you can have a hot dog. And it's like, no, dude, you know, hot dog isn't going to pay this gas, or it's not going to pay my oil change and stuff. And so that's one thing that with the education, too, they kind of taught me that, like, you know, how to get your trans and how to get your rate and, you know, making sure the matches that you have, you know, you, when you're in the ring, you know, making sure that you're putting out your best, but also, you know, elevating things to where everybody looks good too, you know, and making sure that your name is good enough to be, even be booked, really, you know.
So you're making some connections in St. Louis. At what point do you decide that St. Louis is a viable option?
Well, I stayed in Texas for a long time. I actually, because I started wrestling in 2010 down there, and then Pierre, I think it was like my third or fourth Anarchy show. So like around November, I think, of 2010, he had somebody that had to drop out, and he was a tag team champion at the time of the promotion with Jojo Bravo, and they were like in this group that was starting out. So and Jojo too. I can't believe I didn't even mention Jojo. Jojo was he was needed a tag partner, and Pierre came up to me and he said, hey, this guy had to drop out. Can you be in St. Louis in 2 weeks? And I said, yeah, man, I can definitely be in St. Louis. And that was my first St. Louis show. And I ended up, it was me and I think Aaron Solo tagged up against Bad Luck Fale and Tony Kazina. So oh, that was awesome. Actually, yeah, that was pretty cool. And then we actually ended up, I tagged up with Darren Dean in a four-way against the Hooligans and Vega and somebody else. I think Rudolph was in there too with Darren Childs as his partner or something. I know that one's on IWTV. It's like one of the earliest ones from my time at Anarchy. But I wrestled there, and I think around 2015 I started getting like that itch to try and train again and everything. And so I heard about Funaki School. I had some friends down there in San Antonio that trained with him, Scotty Santiago and Dylan Dunbar, and they were like, you know, hey, come on down here. And you know, I had people that were like, yeah, it'd be a good idea for you. And so I moved down there and started training on with Funaki, and you know, it made the commute a little bit easier to Austin for the Inspire shows. And when you know, doing RCW in San Antonio, it was like 10-minute drive to Retama Park to do the shows at RCW. So it was way better.
Better than most of Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. Way better than 4 and 5. So 4 and 5 hours. And then through like San Antonio, they have, places that I haven't wrestled for them, but BOW was a place. And, RCW, I would do stuff with there. And then, when I moved to San Antonio, I went to a show in Cyprus it was an NWA show. I don't remember the name of it, but it was an NWA show in Cyprus, and they had Tim Storm there, and he was the national heavyweight champion. So he didn't have an opponent, and they were like, all right, Shire, you want to wrestle him? I was like, yeah, dude, that'd be cool. And
that's then
cool. Like, man, I messed up in the match, though. I messed up on a few things, and people started booing me, and then I started getting in my head too, because I was like, oh man, that was kind of a time too where I kind of talked about it a little bit too on Twitter, but you know, like, in 2010, I was diagnosed with like depression. So I've kind of like dealt with that a little bit. So definitely like that match, that was like a huge opportunity and everything. Like it probably was a bigger opportunity in my head than it actually was, but I also like overthought it. And I just was like, I got so down about it, that, like, I just, yeah, I, my wrestling kind of really suffered from that, I guess. And it's not just that one, like, incident, but, like, at Inspire, I won the Pure Prestige title, and I really wanted to make it something, and, you know, like, I don't feel like I had the best matches, and I ended up losing it to Keith Lee, and then he ended up being champion for, like, 2 years and doing this really great thing for it, you know, and, like, he deserved it, you know, but, like, I always felt like I could have performed a little bit better, too, so that was just something, and just, you know, things kept on piling up, and then in 2006, we went to do extra work for WWE because of Funaki, and I was talking with William Regal, and he seemed to really, you know, be interested in what I was doing, and Sammy Guevara and I had, like, a little 5-minute match before SmackDown, you know, nobody in the arena or anything like that, but just wrestled him 5 minutes. And it's funny because that was a match that was advertised twice in Texas, but it never happened. But it happened in front of, like, no, William Regal and Arn Anderson. Yeah, yeah, it happened in front of them. Yeah. And Roman Reigns telling me to go to top rope and stuff. Like, that was, you know, but
that's cool.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. And yeah, I just remember William Regal, like, talking to me and telling me about stuff that I could do to be a better heel and better villain and this and this. And it was just so informative and everything. And we had to do promos after that. And my promo kind of stunk, but he understood. And he just told me, he's like, look, man, you just need to get out. You know, like, I mean, I was in my head too, and about everything, about my performances. And, you know, just, he told me, he was like, you know, you just need to get out. And I asked him, I said, well, where do you think? And he's, that's for you, you know, where do you want to go? And so I was thinking about it. And then a month later, I was wrestling Rodney Mack. And 3 minutes into the match, I did an up and under through his arm. Like, I had an arm ringer, went up and under. He punched me in the face, and my foot didn't come off the mat, and I broke my leg. And,
no.
Yeah, so I was out until, that was September, no, October of 2016. And then I didn't have surgery until October for my leg. And then, you know, going through the rehab and everything with that. And then I was around wrestling, and, you know, when I was on my crutches, and I tried to go to shows, or, like, I would go try to do training and stuff and try to just help out or whatever. And because I liked being around it, but still I was, like, you know, depressed and, you know, not in the best mindset probably to be in around wrestling. And I was actually talking about this a little bit ago, you know, like, having my friends be successful, and it's like, I really, you know, like, that's awesome for them and everything, but I'm here in my bed for 3 months, you know, not being able to do anything after just having this really inspiring conversation with somebody who's a hero of mine.
So
like, I was gone, and then I got cleared in February of 2017. And you know, I would go to shows, and people would say, yeah, like, we want to book you and this and that. And then I didn't have a show until August of 2017. And then, you know, I had a match. It was a good friend of mine in Japan. His name is Shigeyuki Kawahara. But he came down to train with Funaki, and Dylan Dunbar, who runs Heavy Metal now in San Antonio, he booked that match. And, you know, it really, like, kind of showed me, you know, that I could do this again, kind of thing. You know, like, it's an injury, and then I've had a string of, like, matches where I felt like my performance wasn't that good. And then I had, you know, this 15-minute match with Shige after not wrestling for a year. And then some personal things happened with me to where, you know, I just needed to look at my life a little bit more serious, I guess, you know, and really just trying to be better, I guess, better, mm-hmm. and better in a lot of aspects and stuff. And I just really looked at wrestling, and I said, you know, I've been dealing with this stuff, you know, and all this time, and my friends are so successful, and, you know, they're doing good things and everything. It's like, I can do that. I just need to, you know, for lack of a better way, just, you know, pull my head out of my butt, you know, and just do it, kind of thing. And I didn't have anything holding me back, you know. I didn't have anything. I mean, I have family in Fort Worth, but they were understanding, and I talked to Vega, and that's basically how the conversation started about coming to moving from Texas and coming to St. Louis.
And you've been killing it since you've been in St. Louis. I mean, you've been all over the country. No, you have been. No, you legitimately have been. You've been killing it. You've been all over the country. You've been, you know, really proving yourself. You've been, you know, appearing on shows all over. But I want to talk a little bit about the St. Louis scene itself. Because you know, we got a you know, St. Louis Anarchy seems to be your home. Would you agree?
I would say yeah. I never really had like a place to call home, and this seems more like home than anything.
Talk about that promotion, the atmosphere in Spalding Hall. Why you do feel it's home? Talk about the heartbeat of that promotion.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I feel like I've been kind of rambling too, so I'll try to keep it, you know, to that. But really, I mean, with when I came up here, Pierre Jackson was doing NWL at the time, and so he just basically said, you know, come up here and I'll, you know, give you an opportunity. I can't guarantee anything. We have a bunch of people under contract, you know, just come up here and see how you do and, you know, see what's up with your mental health and everything and like what's going on. And so yeah, like just that pretty much from Jackson, you know, was when Anarchy came back, that's really all I needed was this, you know, this is somebody who has he's been really vocal about his support for me also too, like somebody that I've known for 10 years. And I remember I wrestled Gary at Anarchy at ACW in Austin in like 2014 or something like that, 2014 2013, and I remember just having like, we had probably the best match I've ever had you know, in the States, and like nobody really gave, you know, anything about me. And they thought Gary was just going to eat me up. And, you know, we had a Gary J. Thomas Shire match, basically, you know, before that was the first one that we had. And we just went all out and it really just shifted. And then I think that's when, you know, Jackson was really, I mean, we traveled up and down because they used to meet me in Fort Worth and we would drive down from Fort Worth to Austin. And then I would drive them back up, you know, like that was kind of the exchange and everything. And so really just that, I mean, NWL, when they closed down, I was doing stuff with PWCS, Greg Jovi's promotion at the time, and you know, just Jackson really believing in me and giving me those opportunities. And because I mean, the places that I've wrestled before, I don't feel like I've really been there that long in a way. With ACW, I was there maybe 2 full years or something like that, and even then, it was coming back up from, you know, trying to make a name for myself, I guess. And it was always scrambles and, you know, 10 man multi-mans and stuff or tag teams. And then I kind of got thrown into, you know, Jojo Bravo's group, and we became tag team champions by osmosis, basically.
Sure.
Of his partner leaving the promotion. And so like that, and then like Inspire, I was Pure Prestige champion, and like I said, I probably, you know, I didn't have my best foot forward at that time, and my mindset about wrestling just wasn't good and wasn't right. So, you know, I was probably with Inspire for a full year and a half, maybe something like that. And, not saying that these people didn't believe in me, but I know 100% whenever I talk to Jackson or whenever I have a match, you know, set up or anything like that, or Jackson comes to me with a date or, you know, hey, what do you think about this? Like, he backs me 100%. And like I said, it's not anything against those people. I feel like the only other really kind of promoter in a way that does that is Dunbar at Heavy Metal. And maybe it's just because we're friends and we went up and down the road together too, but you know, he's the one that put me up against Kingston and put me up against PCO and stuff and really changed. And that's something that like Pierre did. It was kind of like the Undertaker streak where I went to Anarchy and I started winning and winning and winning and winning, and it just kind of like built up, you know. And we kind of noticed it, and but then I ended up losing to Warhorse, which, you know, no shame in losing.
No shame in that. Yeah, he's gonna be on TV tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like all these people that I lose against, they're on TV, you know. So even though I beat Ricky Starks at Anarchy, so he's got to get me back. But yeah, just Jackson believing in me, and that's why. You know, maybe it's the different mindset that I'm in with wrestling, and maybe it's just like having somebody, you know, that I know that supports me. And then the fan base, like you were saying, man, like I can't even describe it really in a way. It's just to see like Anarchy when it started out again, and there was maybe like, you know, 150 people or some, you know, good amount of people for that building and everything, and like the energy was there and it was crazy. And You know, the people wanted Anarchy, the brand of Anarchy, back. And then now with them booking people like Nick Gage, where like there's 350 people in the building, like we're at maximum capacity, like legitimate maximum capacity. I mean, not right now because everything going on in the world, but
everything's gone to shit now. But yeah,
yeah, you know, but we're gonna do our best. Especially we have 50 people, but we see. I mean, I see people online saying 50 people is gonna sound like 1,000. You know, and that's what it really is. It's when you come out, and I remember coming out my first couple shows, and people just be like, okay, whatever, dude. You know. Like, I remember I wrestled like KLD and Larry D in my first two matches, and they were like, you're going to get eaten up, you know, like you're nothing. Who are you? And even though I had like PWCS matches at the same building, it was kind of a different crowd. It wasn't like they had like a more family friendly crowd. And then Anarchy is like Anarchy fans, you know? So yeah, it's just, it's something where those people are just, I mean, they love wrestling. It's almost like whenever I watch ECW back in the day, or if I watch like ROH, you know, people pounding on there's rules set up, you know, don't stand on the chairs. And when I was starting out, I started doing that, you know, because I knew it was going to get on people's nerves, and it did a lot. So yeah, it's just
it's special, man. Ahead. It's special. No, I've been there. It's special. Yeah. It's absolutely special. Yeah
I mean, it's definitely something where, I mean, I always get those butterflies, are like my stomach kind of sinks, you know, like when you're on a roller coaster and it kind of just goes, woo, a second. Like, I always feel like that going out in the curtain, and like, I get it even more. Like, I get it 100 times more every Anarchy show. It's just like this electricity, the static that like, just, I feel it like on my body, you know, like it's just crazy. The adrenaline rush and everything. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to get into it now, but the match that I had with Gary at Hog Wild, that's why I was crying. You know, like, I legitimately was crying in the middle of the ring, because, like, I mean, I was bleeding for 15 minutes and people were chanting and saying F you and, you know, cursing me out and stuff like that. And then at the end of it, everybody seemingly was pounding on the mat and, you know, saying thank you and stuff. And it's just like, it's just wild. Like, it's wild. That's all I can really say. It's just.
Yeah, what are some of your favorite matches at Anarchy? What, I mean, obviously the one with Gary, you know, the Warhorse match has to be up there. You know, what are some of your highlights, you know, at Anarchy?
I would say definitely the two Gary matches, the one at No Church in the Wild that we just had not that long ago, and then the Hog Wild match. Mm-hmm. You know, those ones are just really, really stick out in my mind. The Warhorse match was really special too. I originally had it called off. My grandfather passed away about a week before that, and we buried him the day before on my birthday, actually, too. So, yeah, and I talked to my family, and they were just like, you know, just go, because, you know, it's going to be on a, I think it was on a Saturday that day, or Friday. Because usually they're on Friday, but that was like a random Saturday show, I think. And either way, I was able to make it to the show. And, you know, I talked to my grandmother about it, and she said, go ahead and do it. And so I drove down from Michigan that day. And, you know, me and Warhorse, we were going to try to go, you know, King's Road and everything and really show out. And I feel like that match was really, really good. The really hard-hitting match, fun, exciting. So that one sticks out. I think that's one that people kind of saw me a little bit differently too. Definitely the Gary matches. The first Gary match at Hog Wild, I think people really started thinking of me differently. Jeremy Wyatt, when I wrestled Wyatt for the GHC, you know, just trying to do more wrestling and working that kind of pure style. And at the time, I was a little bit disappointed in my performance. I'm not going to lie about that. But, you know, rewatching it and listening to people, you know, getting the feedback and stuff from fans and everything and other wrestlers. It's something that I actually really, really enjoy, because
shows your versatility.
Like, yeah. Wyatt's, I think, is, I mean, he's been the champion that long for a reason. And I mean, he's a personal favorite of mine. He's always somebody, whenever I'm on a show with him or I see he's on a show, you know, I always try to sit back and watch and see what he's going to do. just because he's got that, so he's got that old school style and everything, and you know, he's a smarmy guy, so he just puts people in their place. So I would say, yeah, those. I had a match with Aaron Williams not that long ago, I think at Anarchy. Battle is Falling, I think. No, that's the name of this one. Spirit is Falling is the name of the new tournament, but is that one of the last ones, the one right before the Strong Style series? I'm really bad with the names.
It's all good. I apologize. No, I'm terrible with them too.
Names and dates. Yeah, names and dates. I remember getting hit and stuff, but I actually just went back and watched me and Aaron from that show a couple days ago, and I was really excited about that matchup to begin with. And then after the match, you know, we have, you know, I end up winning, and then people start chanting, "Please come back to him." And he's like, "This, I've been here." You know, he's wrestled there a couple times, and he was booked for the you know, the Strong Style yeah. tournament. And I really liked the match that I had with Makabe too.
I love that match. I was there for that. I love that, actually.
Thank you. I was like, see, I was a little bit disappointed in my performance on that one too, but you know, like, I know Klein was one of the first people I saw after that, and he was like, "Yo, man, that was wild." And I was just like, "Ah, you know," and he's like, "No, man, like, you know." And I've talked to Daniel about it, and you know, he kind of, you know, we have our little thing about the match, and we definitely want to wrestle again, you know, and see what we can do again. Cause you know, again, that was something where Strong Style tournament, and you know, he's more of kind of like a submission guy, kind of grappler and everything. So, I mean, he can hit really hard. Believe me, I saw stars a couple times against him, but you know, he's just such an accomplished submission wrestler too, that we kind of took that away with only the knockout or pin too. So, you know, really highlighting something for him. I would love to get in a match that's a little bit, you know, less restraining of him. And yeah, but just, you know, like, that's one of those things. Like, I appreciate those things. It's something too, where up here too, like, not that Texas fans don't, you know, applaud people or, you know, give people credit or anything like that. I would never say that, because I actually do go back down and wrestle at Inspire and wrestle at Heavy Metal now. And since, you know, coming back, everybody's been very, very, like, receptive of me and everything. And it's possible too, because like I said, my mindset at the time when I was down there, a little bit of a, you know, a-hole at times too. So maybe they weren't, you know, as accepting, and maybe, you know, that's something that floats in where, you know, with the wrestling too, maybe they don't want to talk to me too. So, you know, the standoffish, I've been told that I had that kind of face. But you know, just the fans at Anarchy too, is when very vocal about their support for people, and you know, always tagging us and other promotions that they want to see us in, or you know, you guys need to check out this match, or you know, tweeting out gifts, or you know, even just interacting and you know, going and like, I didn't know who Klein was. And,
oh, he's one of my dearest friends on the planet, and he is. Right? And he's a gem. He's an absolute gem. Yeah.
Like, I didn't know who he was. And I think one day he just came up to me and started talking to me about stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, this is like new, you know, mm-hmm. Like, I think that's one thing too, is just, with my social media too, it's something where people interact with me more too, I guess. And maybe it's something that I didn't see or didn't care to see before too, but it's, you know, if I take what you said earlier about, you know, being on a little bit of a run, that's basically it. You know, it's nice to hear feedback about what people liked, or, you know, even if they didn't like the match, I would like to hear about that too. You know, I can take criticism. A lot of people, you know, only want to be told the good stuff. And, you know, I'd like to hear about the bad stuff too. You know, that way I can know, you know, maybe don't do this next time, or, you know, things like that too. So,
I think you've been on a hell of a run, especially since getting to St. Louis. I think you've been on a hell of a run.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's one thing where I always try to kind of be humble and stuff and kind of downplay things. But I mean, yeah, like, I really, you know, I appreciate you saying that. And also, like, in my head too, I feel that I am, you know, just on a different level now with what I'm doing. And I believe it's a mindset thing. It's a, not to get too much into this stuff, but you know, the law of attraction and things like that, and just like putting in habits. And I've read the book Atomic Habits and The Art of War and things like this. And, you know, just putting out more positivity and not like being in such a negative headspace about stuff. And because, you know, like, oh, I have to drive 8 hours to go to El Paso and then I'm going to make $40 and I'm going to have to drive back. And like, I just don't want to do this. And it's like, now it's like, no, nah, man, I get to go drive down to, you know, Atlanta 8 hours and go hang out in this badass bar. I'm sorry, I don't know if I can cuss.
No, you can say whatever the fuck you want, man.
All right. But yeah, like, you know, just going down this badass bar and hang out with these people and having badass matches. And, you know, like, I wrestled Shug there the last time I was at AWE in Atlanta.
Oh, I was there. It was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, yeah. We showed up about 15 minutes before the match, too. So it's hungover after going to heavy metal. But that's just, you know, that's one thing too, where really putting out that positive energy. I don't like to say positive vibes or anything like that. It's just that it's a mindset, and it's really just building those habits. And it's an environment too, where I can look on social media and I can look at my feed, and it's all, you know, positive, uplifting things, or like character building things. And, you know, instead of looking at, oh, well, this, you know, I got to see Steve Cook with his rippling muscles and he's got this, you know, nice house, and, you know, like, you become envious of it. And at least I do. And, you know, I'm a little bit more vocal about this now. I feel more comfortable talking about it. And I appreciate you, you know, giving me a platform to talk about it. But yeah, just, I think that, and it's one thing where, like, I joked around about it because I don't really like doing it. But I kind of made that comment about where the night before the Shug match, I wrestled JD Griffey, who's a really good talent in Texas. He just came back from, I believe, AAA, like a week before we wrestled in San Antonio. And we wrestled, and people were chanting, "This is awesome," pounding on the mat after the match. Go, you know, next day, wrestle Shug for 20 minutes or whatever it was, and people pounding on the mat saying, "That's that good shit." And, you know, it's one of those feelings where, it's like when I was saying about Anarchy, with that static feeling, or like that, you feel that energy, and just having a match and knowing that, you know, you're trying to put out your best work, or, you know, like when you know that the match is gelling or meshing well, and, you know, things are just hitting and the crowd is into it and they care about it and they're showing emotion. And like that, those are the things too, where that's just, you know, I joked about it and said, you know, who else could get two standing ovations night after night in two different states and cities, you know? But really it's, you know, not to try to be snarky or, you know, full of myself, but I do feel, I mean, I have that pedigree. I get tired of talking about it. I feel like people get tired of me talking about it too, but, you know, training with Dory. And like I said, I was pampered, not pampered in a way, but, you know, just, I had that luxury of training in a WCW ring with somebody who has 40 years of experience in wrestling, who's a legend, and then going over to Japan and training in Japan in that ring, and then learning from somebody like Kaz Hayashi, who has 20 years of experience at that time, was in WCW, you know, and then Nishimura, who was trained by Carl Gotch, by Hiro Matsuda, Tatsumi Fujinami, you know, all these people, and just kind of having that knowledge put in there. It's kind of just like, you know, I don't mean to be you know, full of myself, but
you've had the knowledge base put in there. Yeah.
Like, I have this knowledge and I have this talent, and, you know, I can be humble and not brag about it, or, you know, I try to find ways to where, you know, I don't come off as an asshole about it. Cause I know when I went to Texas and people were like, "Oh, you trained with Dory, you went to Japan, you're some superstar." And I'd be like, "No, like, I'm trying," like, you know, in a way, like in real life, I'm just kind of a down to earth, shy person. So, like, I really don't like talking. I don't like – that's why I ramble, I think, too.
No,
which,
dude,
I apologize
doing,
about that.
You're doing fine. You're doing fine, honestly.
Yeah, like, and, you know, I don't like doing podcasts a lot. I know Tommy messaged me and said, you know, like, this is who this is. And, like, I've really only done the Anarchy pod, you know, the Submission Squad one. And that went for 4 hours. So, you know, I could, this one would probably go for 8. But
we'll close this up a little bit here. I'm just kind of looking forward a little bit. You know, you're in Block A, yes. You know, for the tournament, what are they calling it? The Spirit of
Spalding.
Spirit of Spalding tournament, yeah. I'm terrible name just like you are.
But
talk about the block system and what you think about it, and some of the people in your block and what you see coming up.
Well, like, to me, I feel like it's somewhat of a new idea in a way. Like, it's almost like a New Japan Cup meets like a G1 kind of deal, in a way. And it's really good, I feel, in the current climate of the world, where there's all these limitations on, you know, how many people can be in a room, how much this and this. And, you know, like, we're always trying to be conscious or like on the forefront of things. I mean, I feel like anarchy's with anything really, I mean, the speaking out that was going on, with the pandemic going on, anything like that. I mean, we've had a code of conduct there for, I don't even know how long it's been that long. You know, and Jackson is always, he don't care. He says wrestling don't matter that much to me, you know? And that's kind of something too, where, you know, some people might see that and they're like, oh, well, he doesn't care about wrestling. It's like, no, he actually does care about wrestling enough to not care about wrestling and actually tackle these issues. And, I just feel like, with the way it is, I mean, there's 12 people in each block, from what I understand. And, you know, so there should be 6 matches. So that's actually really good too. I feel like those 10, 12, match cards can sometimes drag on. There's nothing wrong with it. Not saying that. But sometimes, you know, 3-hour shows or things like that, it's hard to keep that consistency sometimes. So it'd be nice to kind of get into, 6 match, almost like an old pay-per-view or like a TV almost.
Oh yeah.
Style of format. And with the point system going on, you know, I believe it's 2 points or 3 points for a fall, and, you know, draws are like a point, and then losses are nothing. And so it makes it interesting, too. And then each block is like really mixed. Well, it was funny when you said that, too, because I believe Moonshine Mantell is in block B, and that's a guy I forgot to mention, too, in Texas. and then Ember Moon was there too. I actually wrestled her, Athena, cool. In a match too. So those are people I'm remembering now, even though we're talking about a different product.
It's all good.
But yeah, just need to, you know, get that in there.
Shout out your people. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, shout out to peeps. Yeah, Moonshine. Don't go in there cold if he listens to this. But yeah, like, that's just, the concept is really cool. And I feel like there's certain things. In independent wrestling that we haven't really maybe seen on an independent level, at least to my knowledge. I don't know too many people that have really done like a G1 format kind of like this, to where it's actually, you know, not just like in a night or like 2 nights or like a month long thing. It's actually going to be a year, you know, and hopefully with things going on, please, dear God, just wear a mask and, you know, wash your hands and sanitize and quarantine if you need to. You know, hopefully those 50 people get more and more, and hopefully, you know, we can add some matches or things like that, or, just the concept of it. And, you know, I feel like people are really going to enjoy the matchups. I mean, it's a round robin tournament. Nothing's going to be announced. Like, I don't even know, you know, it's not something that
it's going to be one of those 11 people.
Yeah, it's either going to be Cole Radrick, it's going to be Ace, you know, Ace, or it's going to be Fred Yehi, or it could be Gary, you know, the first match back, or Jake Durden, it could be Vega, you know, got to fight my roommate in the first match or something, you know. But yeah, it's cool. It's a cool concept.
Yeah, it's a really cool concept, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, it's unique, and I feel like if anybody was the person to do it and make it something actually special and meaningful, it would be Jackson, you know. And I mean, the field that we have in A is really, really stacked, and then the field in B is stacked. I mean, you got Wyatt and Warhorse in the same one. I believe Moonshine's in B too, and a couple other things, and then you got Billy Starks in there too in the A block. You know, so there's, you know,
you had Angelus Lane and B block, yeah.
Yeah, Angelus Lane and B block. So it's not just like, you know, a bunch of guys.
Yeah, you're mixing up. You got a wide array of talent. You got AC Mack and B block. You got,
AC Mack. Yeah.
Yeah, you got a wide array of talent there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, there's 24 people in there too. So
it's, but it's just like, but you're bringing in all sorts of just talent you wouldn't expect. It's not just Anarchy guys. You're bringing in guys like AC Mack. You're bringing in people like Billy Starks. You're bringing in, it's going to be just very different, cool people, wrestling each other.
Yehi being in there too, him in for shows. And I feel like, too, one thing that's actually good about what's going on, if there is even really anything good about, what has been going on in the world. But the cool thing about it is there's always a focus now on certain, like IWTV, I always see it's like, okay, Beyond, and then now GCW or like Paradigm or places like that. And it seems like more places are getting kind of like more of a spotlight. Whereas like, you might have Anarchy and Freelance and, five other promotions all running on the same day and you want to watch it, and sometimes you don't get to it or you don't get to the live stream or, things like that. But now it's kind of like you can watch it and you can see it. And like, that's another cool thing, I think, going into it is that, people will actually be able to watch it and kind of, maybe there might be some conversation started up about like, okay, well, now, the first match was this person, who's they going to, and then, as matches go on, maybe that fifth, sixth match, you kind of cross out those people now who are, who's going to wrestle next. It's almost, it's really fun. I feel like, PWG kind of did that good. Was it the Mystery Vortex where they didn't announce any of the matches or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
And that, that's just one show. Like, you're going to get 12 of those. 24 of those. You're going to get, and then they're going to be, every 2 weeks too? So you're going to get monthly, every two ones every month. And, who's to say what's going to happen, in the future with everything too? So
it's a really cool concept. Yeah.
It's just cool. It's cool. It's unique, and it's Anarchy, man.
Yeah. So if people want to find those shows, they go to IWTV. If people want to find you, how do people find your stuff on social media?
I'm hidden, man. I don't want to. No.
I don't blame you if you are, frankly.
No. I'm on Instagram at @notthatshire_. I am on Twitter at @notthatshire. I do have a Facebook, but I try to keep it private. Just like friends and family, like very, very close friends and family. So, but I do have like a Thomas Shire page that I do not keep up with. So I apologize if you liked it, have those. I'm looking into, I've actually been starting the process of getting a big cartel. So it's going to be Gorgeous Grappler Gear, soon. So I'll have a link to that. I've just ran into a bunch of problems with my designs and trying to get the templates to them. So I'm trying to do like kind of DIY a little bit. So, trying to like grow a little bit with the quarantine too. So getting new endeavors, I guess, new skills. So, those are really my main ones.
Cool.
If everybody wants to check me out on those, I try to do some positivity stuff. So if you like positivity, if you like, self-help stuff every once in a while. If you like, I try to be funny and I'll retweet King's Road stuff. That's basically kind of what I do on there on my social media.
Well, Thomas Shire, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you at St. Louis Anarchy.
Yeah, thank you for having me and thank you for the kind words, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you.
On the Placement Nation Network feed, thank you very much to our loyal listeners. If you guys have put a Placement Nation Network for over 1 million downloads milestone, continue the support and let's keep it up. Jenny and the Band Together back for a new episode of Jenny and the Gems with Superstars on the Superstation from February 86 on Body Press Your Luck number 9. Ryan Everett battles John Kaselka and Calvin Crowell. On newest Highway Down the Impact Zone, Logan and Jacob are back with Matt Souza and Ben Locke to break down episode 3 of Impact on the second anniversary show. On the debut episode of NWA Crock and Roll, Sean Kidd, Dr. G, and Callum McDougall are joined by Jacob Williams to look at Saturday night NWA shows from April 85. The NWA Saturday special is Scott and Dr. G joined by Sean Kidd to discuss the beloved TV championship. Check out the pop feed with the Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, Great Debate, Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind. Great, it was a thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, and so much more.
Jennifer Smith's Jenny Positions, home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Driving, Brother Sister Rewatch, The Journey Through Infinity, and more. Check out the North South Connection, brought to you by JT Rizzo, Jack Campbell, and Aaron George. Home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, and Through Extreme Three Way Dance, Jeff Lynn's Wrestling, Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, TNA Never Dies, and more. We kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. On our social media pages, the greatest song from movie tournament is kicked off, so be sure to vote for your favorites every day. Be sure to check out PoliceTeamNation.com every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles like the Trent SmackDown and Fox Report, The Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, Matt's Disney Live Action Journey, and Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing online shopping on Amazon, check out the PlaySimulation homepage or use PlaySimulation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps us out with no cost to you.